Time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
If the U.S. Supreme Court indeed overturns Roe v. Wade, they're doing the right thing. They're making the right decision on constitutional grounds. They're returning the issue of abortion to the states.
The City of Phoenix is a pro-choice council, and I think we will look at what our options are. We want to make sure women have access to all of the health care in our community. We don't want people to have to go to California. Many of the people who need it most will not be able to do so.
I want to be very clear to the Attorney General. He is not going to campaign off the backs of the good employees of Maricopa County. We're not going to allow it.
We already live in very divisive times, and instead of casting aspersions or casting stones, we should be working together to address issues so everyone, no matter who they are, can have confidence in the electoral process.
Why isn't that happening now?
Because we never got a legally compliant draft EPA.
But that's not how that works. The conversation is what should go in, what should go out.
And with us to talk about the leaked draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court on the future of Roe v. Wade, another series of accusations between Maricopa County and AG Mark Brnovich and more, our former congressional candidate Christine Jones. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
And former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Roy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to both for being here. So you are both attorneys. So I want to ask you, first off, what your general reaction was. Christine, let me start with you. When you read that a draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court had been leaked, I mean, folks in the media were fairly surprised. As an attorney, what was your first thought?
Well, as an attorney, it seemed like probably the single most egregious act somebody at the Supreme Court could do. And, you know, they take their secrecy and their privacy and the sort of sanctity of that institution so seriously, and they hold it so sacrosanct that the leak portion of it was really shocking to me and all of my colleagues, you know, who work with me on a daily basis. And, you know, we can get to the substance of it later, but I wonder, apart from getting out the vote, what would be worth losing your entire career, because whoever leaked this almost certainly will be disbarred. What would be worth risking your career to do something that egregious? And I can't come up with an answer.
Yeah, Roy, that kind of seems to be the general consensus among those sort of in the political world, that this was a pretty, the word egregious has come up a lot. Is that what comes to mind for you?
Well, I would say that the leak itself is unusual, certainly. I mean, it's not something we typically see. But when I think about what, you know, I would view as egregious, what egregious is to me is what's actually in the opinion itself. And if we're going to get into the substance, you know, we can. But it's unusual that an opinion is leaked. SCOTUS, as Christine has mentioned, you know, really values the sort of privacy of the deliberations at the court. So it is unusual that it was released. That being said, I mean, I've had a view of the Supreme Court as being a political body for a long time. And so to me, you know, a lot of times, I think, particularly when you're in law school, you are given this view of the Supreme Court as this sort of sacred place. But ultimately, I think what we've been seeing, particularly in recent years, is a Supreme Court that's driven in a lot of ways by politics. And so I'm not surprised that this decision is happening, unfortunately, and I'm also not totally surprised that this leak happened.
Christine, the opinion, public opinion of the court has been sort of slowly trending downward over the last number of years. Does this play into that, do you think? Does this maybe move it further down? Does this affect how people think about the U.S. Supreme Court?
It has to, Mark. I mean, I've actually been asked by a couple of people in the last number of days, do you think this is the end of the court? Hmm. And of course, unless we change the Constitution, the answer to that is no.
Right.
But it really does harm the respect, and you know, Roy mentioned all of us as law students had this just incredibly high esteem for the intellect and the deliberative process and the non-political approach to which justices apply facts and law and come up with decisions. But I don't think you can get away from what happens when you politicize this. And if you're going to make them legislators and you're going to make them political, then we really only are left with two branches of a three-branch system. And it's, you know, it's a quandary, particularly for lawyers. What do we do from here? Do we have to go change the Constitution and, you know, make some different construct for the court? It's a great question for all of us to ponder.
Roy, what do you think it means if people have left less faith, less confidence, less esteem for the institution of the court, and maybe in some instances for the justices themselves?
Well, I mean, in a perfect world, we would have this third branch of government, and that branch would approach things in the way that Christine and I think were told in law school. But I just don't think that has been the approach, particularly of this court. And I think, you know, people are kind of waking up to the reality. And, you know, I saw yesterday a poll about, you know, particular Supreme Court kind of reform that could be proposed, things like term limits and age limits and whatnot for justices. And there's pretty overwhelming support for those kinds of things now. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that I think on both sides, we see the idea here that the Supreme Court is a political body and that there should be some restrictions on that, particularly given the fact that these people are not elected. And so if they're actually making political decisions and they're not being elected, that's not really a good system. So I think that is going to be the future in how we approach it. And I think in this particular November, you are going to have a lot of discussion politically in the election related to the Supreme Court and the power that it has.
So then let's talk about that and turn to the, as you both alluded to, the substance of this leaked draft opinion. If the Supreme Court does, in fact, overturn Roe v. Wade relatively soon, let me start with you, Christine. What's your reaction, and what's reaction been in Republican circles here?
Well, you played a soundbite from Kathy Herod, I think, if I recognize the voice properly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. at the outset. And clearly the pro-life advocates are very enthusiastic about this, because their position from the beginning was this was a constitutional right that did not exist. And so the reasoning of the court, if you read the 98-page opinion, was sound. It was well thought out. It went back to history and it said, look, there never really was a constitutional right. In this case, abortion was never mentioned. It was, quote unquote, egregiously wrong. And so those advocates and those people who look at this as sanctity of life issue and not as a medical decision are very enthusiastic and frankly, very relieved, because they've been fighting for this for 50 years. So, you know, in the circle of people that I communicate with most often, the enthusiasm is there. Although I will say there is some reluctance to go out and celebrate, because that was, in fact, a draft opinion, mm-hmm. and there is no change in the law as of right now.
Let me ask you then, Roy, the same question, but on the other end of the political spectrum here, I imagine people are relatively upset.
I think people are very upset. I mean, I'm upset, you know, someone who's pro-choice and doesn't believe that the government should tell women what to do with their bodies. And I just don't think that this is the right decision by the court. And I think the opinion itself is fascinating in a lot of ways, particularly in its discussion about this idea that, you know, this right that women have wasn't enshrined in the Constitution, in this historical view that we should be approaching, you know, rights, and particular women's rights, from, you know, kind of an originalist, you know, perspective. And if you look at what the Constitution was and how it was interpreted at the beginning, there were very few rights for women and very few rights for people of color, et cetera. So it's just an interesting way of looking at things that I think is wrong. But I think politically speaking, polling shows, and I believe, that the majority of Arizonans, as well as the majority of Americans, are pro-choice. And I think that if I had to predict, this is going to galvanize folks on my side of the aisle for November and get them to come out and try to elect pro-choice politicians. And I think that's what's going to be the discussion, you know, kind of stepping back a bit. And I don't want to make this purely political, because, you know, people's lives and health are at risk here. But making this political, I think, only helps the Democrats in some ways, because this was going to be a midterm election where there was always going to be concern about turnout. And an issue like this, actually, I think, will get people very enthusiastic.
I mean, Roy, do you think that'll come to fruition? Is it too big of a stretch for people to understand the connection to down ballot and sometimes very local races? And Dems were expecting a really rough election cycle here coming up.
Well, it's interesting. I've seen polling before this decision was leaked that didn't show that people, I think, recognized the imminence, I think, of this decision. I mean, I think I'm not totally surprised that this is what the court has decided to do. If you read the tea leaves, I think, with the conservative nature of this court, that this was coming. But I think people didn't know that it was coming. And I think now that it's here, and I'm going to presume that the opinion that actually gets issued in this case is going to look very similar to what was leaked. When this happens this summer, I think people will be able to make that connection, particularly in a state like Arizona, which already has a ban on abortions after 15 weeks, and in other states where there's effectively going to be a complete ban. And so I think people will make that connection easier now as a result of this decision.
Well, Christine, as you point out, and Roy alluded to, this is a draft opinion. Things could certainly change between now and when the final ruling is issued, we expect this summer. But let's assume for a moment that the draft is indicative of the direction a majority of the justices are going. Does that make the midterms maybe less rosy for Republicans? Is there a concern that this could really boost turnout for Democrats and maybe some of the gains that the GOP expected to make, maybe they won't make?
Sure. I think anybody who says that that's not the case is probably either being dishonest or burying their head in the sand. Now, the Republicans also can and should and will make this a rallying cry themselves, right? Because look what you accomplished by putting Republicans in office and electing or selecting conservative justices. So it could weigh in favor of that as well. The big issue, right, the big elephant in the room is what happens to Biden's approval rating, and is anybody going to be able to ride his coattails? And at the moment, at least as of this date, it doesn't seem like there's much there to ride. But if I'm thinking about a clerk who went to a top law school and got top grades and got the most coveted job of any law school graduate, being willing to risk their career, I have to think the only reason to do that is exactly what Roy just said, and that is to boost the chances for the Democrats in the midterm, because it was going to be super brutal and very ugly for the Democrats right up until this draft opinion was leaked.
Roy, I want to ask both you and Christine about where this leaves the legislature, because there seems to be some confusion about if Roe is overturned, what the abortion law actually is in this state. The governor signed a 15-week ban earlier this year, and he has said that he thinks that supersedes the pre-Roe law that basically bans abortion in all cases at all times. You're both attorneys, so I want to get your legal takes on this. Roy, where does this leave the landscape in Arizona?
I mean, it's an interesting legal question because of that original law, I mean, which is a complete ban. And not only that, but I think it criminalizes it. So you could go to jail potentially if we were to follow the original, you know, Arizona law. This recent law, I think, probably does supersede that. It is a 15-week ban, but it doesn't have exceptions for, you know, rape and incest and things like that. I wouldn't imagine after this decision, if it were to occur at the next legislative session, we'd see even more restrictive ban from this legislature if it's Republican controlled. So I think it's not, you know, ultimately going to be the last word on this. I think the Kathy Herods of the world are going to push for even more restrictions. And I think, again, that's going to be part of the political debate for November. And I think that both sides are going to, to Christine's point, are going to be very enthusiastic about this, because this is a galvanizing issue, I think, particularly, you know, on each side. But at the same time, on our side, knowing the existing rules, if nothing were to change, being as restrictive as they are, I think that should be something that people are concerned about and people come out to vote over.
Christine, the governor, as I mentioned, thinks that the law he signed this year supersedes the old one. Kathy Herod disagrees with that. What is your take on that?
Well, I don't disagree with Roy. I would add a couple of things. One, the law is the law. And if somebody wants to challenge it, they're going to have to go take that case up to the Supreme Court or have some judicial body review it, right? So I think Roy and I probably, from just a strict legal interpretation, agree on that. Now, if you are to believe the opinion, most of the 50 states had no abortion legal at the time of Roe versus Wade. And to go back to that seems ripping off a Band-Aid that the court did not intend. But that doesn't mean to say that we won't have half or more of the states going back to that construct and people lobbying their state legislatures to go back to the pre-Roe era, you know, of abortion laws. But the law in Arizona is what it is. The Supreme Court didn't change it. They just merely said, hey, states, go fight this out among yourselves. And if you want to live in a state where abortion is legal, go live in that state. And if you don't, go live in the states where it's not. That doesn't change the laws that are on the books, in my opinion. Okay, I'm not a Supreme Court justice, but that's how I read it.
All right, that is Christine Jones, also with us, Roy Herrera. I'm Mark Brody with Lauren Gilger. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues in a moment. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. I'm Mark Brody. Our guest today, former congressional staffer Roy Herrera and former congressional candidate Christine Jones.
Let me start this round of the cap here with a few more questions on the abortion issue because it's such a big one this time. I want to ask you both about one of the murmurings you're hearing around here about the potential local implications of this, a potential 2024 ballot initiative on abortion. What are you hearing on that front, Roy?
There's certainly been conversations about that, about a constitutional ballot measure, you know, something that would amend the state constitution to enshrine the woman's right to choose. I think, you know, there's obviously hurdles to that, both from a signature gathering perspective and the cost perspective. And then, of course, you know, ultimately, you know, how this would go through the courts, particularly out in the aftermath of the U.S. Supreme Court decision. So there are hurdles, but there's certainly been a lot of discussion, again, because I think people are very, very worried about what's going to occur. And in particular, as I mentioned before, what the legislature may continue to do in this arena once they're given a free hand to do so.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Christine, about some of the bigger picture issues here. I mean, as Roy mentioned at the top, you know, public opinion is pretty out of step with this opinion from the Supreme Court. Most people are in favor of some form of access to legal abortions in here in Arizona as well. What do you think this issue does in terms of the government, the courts being out of step with public opinion?
It's a great question. You know, I was thinking about what would it take to get this done nationally. And it's, you know, Roy talks about a state constitutional amendment. I'm a little dubious about that because our state Supreme Court has now sort of given a backhand to a couple of attempts by very well-meaning, hardworking citizens who've brought things and got them on the ballot. But could we imagine the possibility of a U.S. constitutional amendment? You know, it hasn't been done since 1992, and it's really hard to get it done. You have to have two-thirds of the state, and getting 66% of the people to agree on anything is about impossible. But here might be an opportunity to pass a constitutional amendment for the first time in three decades. And, you know, I don't know, Roy, how you think about that, but that actually thought did pop to my head, because if more than 50% of the population, and that is the truth, whether you like it or not, think that this is the wrong decision, could this be an opportunity where you just say, you know what, it's not in the Constitution, let's go put it there?
What do you think, Roy?
I mean, it's an interesting question. As Christine mentioned, it hasn't been done on any subject in a very, very long time. But again, we haven't had an issue like this in a very, very long time. I mean, Roe has been established law for so long that once it's taken away, I think everything has to be on the table. Short of kind of a U.S. constitutional amendment, there has been discussion and there are bills in Congress related to this. Now, you know, I'm a little bit dubious of that because I don't know sort of what would be withstand court challenges after this decision is made by the U.S. Supreme Court, even if we were to pass something in Congress. But I think that's going to be a discussion going forward. And you're already seeing pressure on, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema related to the filibuster on whether that kind of legislation could be moved forward, given that there's not going to be 60 votes on it. It would have to be, you know, passed with 50. And so there's going to be a lot of discussion about that, I think, for this November and in 2024, given the unprecedented nature of what we're dealing with here.
Let's make a somewhat awkward transition now. And I want to ask you guys about, we've been talking about the 2022 and 2024 elections. A lot of folks in Arizona still talking about the 2020 election, including Attorney General and U.S. Senate candidate Mark Brnovich, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. Brnovich had, in the recent past, issued an interim report on his investigation into the 2020 election here in Maricopa County. County supervisors, based on their comments, none too thrilled with what the AG had to say. Christine, what do you make of the back and forth that we saw this week?
Well, you know, the political nerds just got their popcorn out and just watched the hearings and the back and forth with great enthusiasm because, you know, we find this to be high theater and high drama. But obviously, Brnovich is in a tight race for the Senate and he needs something to get his name out there, right? So here's the risk, and this is a lawyer speaking. Here's the risk of forum shopping. When you go to Yavapai County or you go to Coconino County expecting to get a conservative judge, and you get somebody who, as the judge said, doesn't cotton to what you're saying, you just made up a bed that you have to sleep in. And that's exactly what happened to Brnovich this week. Now, he and Hobbs have been fighting for months, right? I mean, he threatened to investigate her when the Secretary of State's signature website came down. You know, they've been slinging mud at each other all of this time. But using your platform, particularly when you are the Attorney General, to run for another office is egregious. And Mark has an unusual advantage because his chief of staff, Joe Canfield, is probably the single best elections expert in the state of Arizona. He knows better. He knows better. And so Mark's a Republican. I respect him. I supported him. But this grandstanding thing, it's enough is enough. Enough circular firing squad. You know, let's move on from 2020. Let's focus on things that matter here, the border, education, healthcare, the things that the citizens of Arizona really want to talk about, and leave this 2020 thing in the past where it belongs.
Well, Roy, Christine mentioned or referenced the hearing in Yavapai County, dealing with the disagreement over the election procedures manual. And the judge, we heard at the top of the segment, the judge basically said to the attorney general's attorney, that's not how this works. Like that can't have been a good feeling for folks in the attorney general's office or the attorney general, who, as Christine said, is in a tough primary campaign here.
Well, I mean, that lawsuit, I think, is a perfect example of the problems in the egregious conduct, I think, from the Attorney General over the last years now, I think, related to elections in particular, and the use of the Attorney General's office to further his political campaign. In that particular lawsuit, you have the Attorney General, for the first time I think I've ever seen in my legal career, actually sue alongside a county Republican party, over this particular manual. I've never seen an attorney general join with a political party in a lawsuit alongside them. I mean, Christine mentions the forum shopping in Yavapai County, the idea being that the judge there would be more conservative and more favorable. All of this is just absurd behavior. And I think, you saw the county, Maricopa County Recorder's Office and the board attack some of the reporting and investigations that the attorney general's office has done. And the response from the attorney general, to the questions that the county has raised, has really been substanceless. I mean, there is no response, because at the end of the day, what the attorney general is saying has gone wrong just isn't true when it comes to elections in Maricopa County. So I'm not going to be holding my breath on him stopping this, because as you mentioned, he's running for U.S. Senate. But it is absurd that it occurs. And I just mentioned yesterday to somebody, he may not end up winning that GOP primary for Senate, and he will have no reputation, at least no legal reputation left afterwards.
Christine, just about a minute or so left, and I want to ask you about, you referenced a circular firing squad. You have a Republican-dominated Maricopa County Board of Supervisors really calling out Attorney General Brnovich on the interim report into the election and basically saying, what are you doing here? Like, this is not, we heard from Chairman Gates, we're not going to let you campaign on the backs of Maricopa County employees.
Yeah, and I think between Bill Gates and Stephen Richer and, some of the Maricopa County officials, they're just exhausted. They've been at this for 2 years. They have had to produce thousands or millions of documents. They've been responsive at every turn. And, they can see through this just as well as we can, that this is a political strategy to get your name out and get on TV and get a little bit of free advertising for a person who's in a tight race and is going to have the anti-Trump language coming at him relatively soon. And, really, we ought not to be beating each other up as Republicans. We ought to be focusing on issues that are meaningful to our primary voters.
All right. That will have to be the last word. That is Christine Jones, former congressional candidate. Christine, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Also with us, Roy Herrera, former congressional staffer. Roy, good to talk to you as well. Thanks.
Thank you so much.